Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we meet new novelist and former Tulsan Benjamin Lytle. Lytle's written for the Wall Street Journal, the London Review of Books, McSweeney's, the Daily Beast, and the Nation, and for 4 years wrote the New York Sun's recent fiction column. Today he lives in Chicago and teaches at the University of Chicago's Graham School. Although he hasn't lived in Tulsa for some time, his hometown continues to intrigue and captivate his imagination. Lytle's first novel, titled A Map of Tulsa, is a coming-of-age story set here in the late 1990s, when the very beginnings of a downtown scene was in its infancy, or prenataldom, if you will. That provides a backdrop to a story about Jim Praley, a college undergraduate. After a year of college on the East Coast, he returns to his hometown for the summer, ready to disappear into a self-appointed reading regimen. Instead, he meets Adrian Booker, the abandoned daughter to a local oil fortune, 18 years old, living an independent, mysterious life in the family penthouse. The relationship that unfolds defines the shape of Jim's life. Through Adrian's eyes, he sees the strange beauty of his hometown for the first time. They drink, they dance, they write, they paint, and sing. But eventually, Jim returns to college, and only an unexpected tragedy finds him back in Tulsa some years later. Booksmart Tulsa and This Land Press present A Map of Tulsa, an Evening with Benjamin Lytle, tonight at 7 o'clock at Harweldon Mansion. That event is free and open to the public this evening. And he joins us today by phone. Benjamin Lytle, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This is a wonderful coming-of-age novel. A Map of Tulsa follows Jim Praley, who's just finished his freshman year of college on the East Coast. He's come back home to Tulsa. This is an interesting year to follow because this is like one of those years, and actually a summer, when you do an awful lot of growing up, isn't it?
Yeah. It's kind of like a second chance to be at home, having been away.
In deciding to write about this particular summer, what was the attraction to you? I mean, because when you go off to college, you sort of forge a new identity for yourself. It's a chance to forge a new identity for yourself. And all of a sudden, that first summer you come back, you're competing with this new identity that you've created away at college. And the idea, the way you've grown up as your prior 18 years. Talk about the decision to write about that summer.
Well, you know, I knew the type of field that I wanted, and I had to decide what time in one's life does that belong to. Obviously, it was going to be a young guy, but I kind of went back and forth what exact summer it would be. I'm happy with the choice because of everything you've said. Just going away for a year, you still have a lot of thoughts and feelings about your hometown, but you've also changed a lot.
And there's also that sort of going away feeling, which the book actually gets into, the idea that I'm escaping this town, and yet that first summer you're returning to the town, maybe with trepidation, excitement, or dread. And this is what Jim's feeling as the novel starts.
Yeah, he's conflicted, you know. I mean, he kind of has a chip on his shoulder like so many of us do when we're young. But he's also ready to fall in love with Tulsa kind of for the first time as someone who's, in a way, coming from the outside. So he's kind of an insider, kind of an outsider. And, you know, other thing I was going to say is just that compression is so important in fiction, and I just wanted to put a lot of feeling and a lot of personal change into a small amount of time. And that summer after freshman year, I think, is just perfect for that.
I think it is a time of a lot of change, too, because you're back with your parents, but all of a sudden you've been on your own for a while, and I think most parents will tell you this is one of the most challenging years. That first summer they're back from a child's back from college because they're pretty much an adult, but, you know, you're still dealing with the fact that they're, in your mind, they're still a child. There's a lot of negotiating that goes on in that first summer from a parenting issue, but also just in how that person is becoming an adult. And Jim is certainly going through this himself.
Yeah, and, you know, the relationship between Jim and his parents isn't at the very forefront of the novel, but it's really important. I really was happy with the way that worked out. And I think so many of us know what that's like, so you don't have to explain it in great detail. The reader kind of just understands, I hope.
What interests you at the very first in doing a coming-of-age novel?
You know, to tell you the truth, I started writing about a slightly older character, and then I put in a couple of flashbacks and a couple more flashbacks, you know, where he thought about how he first met these people. And those little flashbacks had a lot of life to them, and they kind of took over the book. They took over the whole first half of the book. Huh. So it was kind of a case of just letting the book take me where it wanted to go.
Now, this is your first novel?
Yes.
Or first published novel? Or both?
It's my first one. It's my first one. I mean, it got a lot of revisions, so it's very different than my first draft. But it's my first novel that I ever wrote.
And I would imagine, coming from a stories background, that's a different beast to take on.
Yeah, yeah. I hope that my future novels will be every bit as good, but they'll be different. I don't know. I wondered a lot about how to write a novel. I had been reviewing books so much. I teach writing a little bit, so I kind of had a lot of baggage, but I just worked on it for a really long time. It was kind of my solution, and I'm pretty happy with the way things turned out. I've had a lot of good luck, too.
Jim Praley, this summer, when he comes home, from what I gathered from my reading, Jim was a high schooler who really had no close friends. He sort of bounced from group to group, but he was really didn't belong to anyone. And then he sort of kind of made his own way when he went off to college. And as he comes home, all of a sudden he's falling in with a very different group from his high school, or at least a couple of friends from his high school. And all of a sudden he moves into a whole new social situation, which he's never been a part of growing up.
Yeah, I think that happens to a lot of us in different ways, different places. And it goes back to what you said, is that when you leave, you get a chance to reinvent yourself a little bit. I don't know, when you grow up in some place for 18 years, you don't necessarily get the opportunities to reinvent yourself that you might like. So that's another reason why, you know, it was good to send him away to college for a year and then bring him back and see what would happen.
And really, it's at that particular point where you really become, at least it was in my own experience, I'm a native Oklahoman as well, where you become more aware of class. Because in high school and growing up in school, it's like, well, a person dresses that certain way, but you don't notice it as much as once you're sort of becoming an adult. And this is a big part of the novel as well.
Yeah. You know, another reason I wrote a coming-of-age novel was because I think they're always about class. Balzac, you go way back, you know, early 19th century French author, wrote all of these great novels about young, ambitious men who come to Paris. And I think part of the reason I wrote this book is I thought, wouldn't it be cool to do that kind of in reverse and have someone not going to New York or going to L.A., but going back home to Tulsa and finding that a very similar dynamic might obtain there.
And in this case, he, Jim, after a night of partying and going out to the Canes Ballroom, and this is another nice thing about the novel for Tulsans, is you're going to recognize so many locations and certain locations that have been mildly changed a little bit. And mm-hmm. names have been changed to protect the innocent, I guess. But
or the guilty.
Yeah, or the guilty. And in this case, he meets this socialite, Adrienne Booker, who is the heiress to an oil company. But she's really grown up on her own. But she is certainly of a different social class. Jim Praley comes from a family of school teachers. Adrienne Booker is somewhat of an artist, sort of a dilettante in the best sense of the word. And utterly alien to anybody Jim Praley's ever known before.
Yeah, I think you definitely want to talk about class, but you also want to talk about the educational difference. Now, Jim has gotten into a good college. Adrienne isn't even going to college, but she's already a very serious artist. Whether or not, you know, she eventually finds success is irrelevant. She has the kind of self-discipline and diligence and belief in herself that to Jim is just amazing and really attractive. And one of the things that I wanted to show was that, you know, maybe that was, you know, another important difference growing up.
Yeah, education, not so much the key, but experience in Adrienne's case. She has been exposed to a wider variety of situations in her life that sort of have spurred her art.
Yeah, for sure. You know, one guy I was talking to had a really interesting take on the book in that he compared it to a Bible story. The story about, this is going to sound kind of overly serious, but of Jesus' temptations, you know, where he went in the wilderness and the devil tempted him three times. And I think one of the temptations is they go to the top of, is it the temple in Jerusalem?
Yes, right.
They go to a height and the devil kind of says, you know, all of this could be yours. And there's something about that I think really resonates with the book, partly because Jim often gets to go up into skyscrapers and gets to go up to a height and look at the city. It's also because of the role that Adrienne plays. Part of the reason that I wanted her to be so so smart in an autodidact way, in a kind of non-schooled way, so serious and so tough, is that I thought that she would be a mentor, but also a tempter. And I think it's really, really nice to think about the way that a mentor and a tempter can be the same person.
This is very true. I'm not sure I get the temptation of Christ analogy, but you're absolutely right that Adrienne is a mentor, and Jim starts living his life in a completely new way. But she is a temptress in the fact that, you know, she's not going anywhere. She's doing her art. She's sort of dabbling in a variety of things. And Jim is tempted by this away from sort of a serious education.
Yeah, he's tempted by a sentimental education rather than a scholarly education.
And that was an intent as you were writing it, or is this a way the character sort of presented himself to you as you were writing them?
Well, intention is hard to locate. You know, I love to draw up little graphs and outlines and even maps of how the story is going to play out, but I don't really have too much control. And, you know, part of the joy is discovering what it is that you're writing as you're writing it.
Well, during this summer, Adrienne is taking Jim on a nighttime raid across backyards and some of the nicer sections of Tulsa. She's teaching him to see the city in a new way, too. This is the other part of the book, is the character of Tulsa itself. Here's a person who, for all intents and purposes, is going to leave Tulsa after high school and never come back. And yet he comes back. And all of a sudden he's seeing the city in a new way in which it's more appealing than it perhaps ever was.
Yeah, I think we all do that a little bit. I mean, it's hard when you're little to see beauty, you know. It's not really on your mind. And so part of it is that he was just there longer. He was very, you know, very aesthetically attuned person, and he just starts to really appreciate the beauty of the city. I think it's a beautiful city. You know, that part of the book is pretty autobiographical.
And there were some really wonderful passages in the book. For example, I think you're writing about the Western approach to the city where, you know, as you're coming in off the Cimarron Turnpike, all of a sudden this may not be what you were describing, but it certainly resonated with me, is as you're coming in, all of a sudden you're driving along the river and all of a sudden you take a bend and a drop in the road and all of a sudden downtown is laid out. There's a passage in the book where it sounds like you're describing that approach. And there just seemed to be a lot of love in that description.
Yeah, a lot of love and I think a little bit of longing too, a little bit of curiosity and puzzlement about what are those skyscrapers, you know, because you can grow up in Tulsa and never set foot in one of them. And it's a little bit different than a city like New York or Chicago, where you just know that there's all this, you know, media and finance world, and it's a little bit less clear growing up in Tulsa. At least maybe I'm parading my own ignorance, but I think I wanted to show a character who loved those skyscrapers, but wasn't sure he belonged to them, wasn't sure that he really could claim them as part of his heritage because he just, you know, didn't have much tangible experience with them. They were always kind of on the skyline. And there's now, and this is one of the big ways that the book is not set in the present, now there's a lot to do downtown. There wasn't really.
No, you're absolutely right. This is describing like the late 90s. And I think it's late 90s because there were these little, you know, when we talk about urban development on the show, I say, you know, for a while there were these little enclaves, and now they become pockets, and now they're almost connected in yeah. some of the interesting ways, like in the Brady District and the like. That's mm-hmm. all of a sudden you're starting to see a real urban atmosphere. But in the time you're describing in this novel, there were these little pockets, you know, like a bar and maybe mm-hmm. a business next to it, and people would go there. And frankly, most of the city was ignorant of its existence, too.
Yeah, well, most of the city probably wasn't, you know, 19 years old. But
which is true. Which
yeah.
is
true. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's funny to write a book about a place where you often go. I often come home, and I'm really close to my family. And that's really separate from writing this book. But I would be hanging out with my folks, and we would go downtown, you know, go to a restaurant or something. And that was kind of strange around about 2009, 2010, because it was both a place that I was kind of living in imaginatively, like all the time, yet it was different than I imagined it, because it was all changing so quickly.
And of course, there are some descriptions in the book about, you know, how downtown comes alive for about 30 minutes in the morning, 30 minutes in the afternoon, and then it's just utterly dead the rest of the time. There's a nice little passage where Adrian is teaching Jim to see the city. She says, you don't look at the whole downtown, you look at this block and this little half a block. And all of a sudden she goes, this is a city. I thought that was a really interesting observation.
Yeah, she's got it charted out so that she can go on a walk and kind of feel like she's in Manhattan. You know, if you just stay on a couple of streets where the buildings are kind of high and give you that nice enclosed canyon kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm. My guest today is Benjamin Lytle. He teaches at the University of Chicago's Graham School, a former Tulsan. And prior to that, he was in New York writing for a number of publications, but he was a critic for the New York Sun, writing their recent fiction column. His first novel is titled A Map of Tulsa, and it's just out, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. As I understand it, the early title for this book was The City I Wanted. Is that correct?
That is correct.
What spurred that title, and was that when you were looking at a book about an older protagonist than Jim Praley?
Well, there are a couple of different important reasons. One thing I learned in the publication process is that the title of a book is an introduction. The way I had been thinking about a title was that it was an interpretation, that it was something to chew over after you had finished the book. And I kind of wanted readers to read it and then to think, well, what exactly did Jim think about Tulsa? Was it the city he wanted? Was it the city he wanted in the sense of it being an ideal or a fantasy that might maybe somehow disappointed him? Was it the city he wanted simply in that he kind of wanted to move there but wasn't sure if that made sense? You know, but I kind of learned that the kind of title I should write would be a title that would draw people to the book and make them curious. And I'm really glad that we have the title we do, because every time I tell people what it's called, well, people from Tulsa seem to like the title, and people who aren't from Tulsa become very curious. You know, they want to know, you know, what Tulsa's like and why I wanted to write about it.
One of the things I really liked about the book, the story is interesting, and the first part, again, the description this summer when Jim meets Adrian, he meets a little bit about his family. As the early title suggests, I don't want to give anything away, but comes in part two when Adrian is, they've grown apart, basically. They had a summer together and went on with their lives, and then something happens, and Jim is brought back into Adrian's orbit and back to Tulsa. But I have to tell you the one thing I really liked about some of your descriptions. For example, and I think anybody who's spent time away from Tulsa will notice this. Like if you're from up north, like New York or Chicago, there's something about coming back home to Tulsa in the middle of the summer, and it's right when you get off the plane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the heat.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, even if you've only been away a week, or if you've been away 6 months or 3 months or 2 weeks, all of a sudden, you know, you've acclimated to this other climate, and all of a sudden, there's something about that heat that says, I'm back in Tulsa.
It's the heat, and it's the humidity, Rich.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it. And you know, we all complain about the humidity because it causes us to sweat, but it can be kind of comforting, just something kind of, you know, enveloping about the heat and the humidity.
And that's the opening of your novel, is I remember the heat the day I came home. I leaned my forehead against my parents' picture window, and the heat came through the glass. That's Tulsa.
Yeah.
That's a great way to start the novel. How much time did you spend crafting that opening line?
Oh, probably a long time. I don't know. I do really enjoy writing. I know that some writers at least claim not to enjoy it, but I love it. And probably the most fun part for me. Well, there are just two distinct pleasures. One of them is shaping the whole narrative and kind of realizing, oh, something has to, you know, that this character has a certain kind of fate or destiny that, you know, I kind of have to face up to. I kind of have to bring them through these kind of revolutions. But the other thing I really like is just rewriting sentences. I mean, you know, that's like whittling wood. It's a great pleasure. You know, it's a simple pleasure in a way.
I would think also a pleasure writing a book about your hometown, and it sounds like you do obviously have affection for your hometown, is describing things you've grown up with, and especially things that you've grown up with and you saw one way, and as you became an adult, you began to see them utterly different. Like there's a description of the Golden Driller. And of course, anybody who's grown up in Tulsa, you know, when you're a kid, you look at that Golden Driller in one way, and then of course, at some point, you begin looking at it as a subject of ridicule at some point in your adolescence or early adulthood. And then all of a sudden it becomes kind of reminds you of home again at some point.
Yeah, you can't but be fond of it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I all of those experiences, the kind of, you know, the kind of childish, kind of like mindless, you know, sort of like, you know, you like the fun parts, like the Golden Driller and, you know, the prayer tower, but you don't necessarily pick up on the city until you begin to learn how to drive, and then you begin to get a feel, kind of tactile feel for the highways and for certain streets and intersections and parking lots. And then you go away, and one thing that amazed me when I first went to college was, like, I didn't have a car anymore, and I just missed driving, that kind of, you know, physical experience of driving, to say nothing of the convenience or inconvenience of it. And I've been writing about Tulsa ever since I left for that reason. So I think I kind of felt like I had something to say about Tulsa. I don't know, maybe if, you know, I was from Memphis or, you know, Little Rock, I would have similar things to say. I'm not sure. But I also think there's something about the way that Tulsa is kind of Western. It's kind of Southern. You know, it's kind of on the border in a certain way. Just really clicked for me as something to write sentences about.
And from a novelist's point of view, you have these class divides that are still there. You have racial divides. I mean, there's so much you could write about Tulsa from a novelist's point of view about human stories.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could go on and on. You know, one thing that's been fun about the run-up to this book coming out is having conversations with people about other books that are about Tulsa. There's a lot of great stuff. You know, there's obviously The Outsiders.
Yes.
There's also the work of Joe Brainard, which is very well-known in the world of poetry and writing pedagogy, but I don't know if it's very well-known outside of that. But he, you know, wrote this lovely book, I Remember, which makes, you know, talk about nostalgia. I mean,
yeah.
Makes my book look like noir. But and then, you know, there's also lots of good history books. There's Larry Clark's Photographs, which are very strange, and which I have no, like, kind of personal experience of those situations. But it's a wonderful city.
You know, it's funny, some of your descriptions of these kids spending the summer and laying around, you know, it's a different world from Larry Clark, but it's sort of same chapter, different verse, maybe, or maybe different chapter, same verse, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, those famous Larry Clark pictures of tough blue-collar kids sitting around a house.
Up.
Yeah, and shooting up, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, it's a pretty dark book. But, yeah, anybody from Tulsa who looks at those has to feel proud. I mean, just the kind of fierceness and the bravery of taking and publishing those photographs is something pretty special that I know that people all over the country really respect who care about photography. But I'm excited also about the new Terrence Malick movie,
uh-huh.
which I understand is going to have a lot of pretty pictures of the Bartlesville area.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
My guest today is Benjamin Lytle. He teaches at the University of Chicago's Graham School, and he has written for a number of publications, including the New York Sun, where he was their recent fiction columnist for 4 years. His new novel is titled A Map of Tulsa, A Novel, and he'll be featured in a BookSmart Tulsa event tonight in the city. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, one of the things you said, you've been intrigued by Tulsa for a while. Do you find having the distance from the city helps you write about it, or is it a hindrance?
I think it does help me. You know, I have a kind of longing for it. And you know, I mean, to have a longing for something, you have to be away from it. You know, the word long, you have to be a long ways away. It has to be a long time ago. So that certainly helps. And it gave me the structure of the book. It was about somebody who returns, and he returns twice. He returns in part one, and he returns again in part two. And, you know, there were some challenges to that as a writer. You know, I would be interested in writing about a book in which someone was a little bit more enmeshed in the fabric of a place, you know, someone who had been living there for a while when the story began. I had to do a lot of, you know, introductions at the beginning of the book. You know, the protagonist meets person X, person Y, person
right.
Z. But I think being away from the city helped, not because it gave me some kind of critical distance. I mean, quite the contrary. It made me love the city very much, right?
Right. I think the city of memory is perhaps more real than the city of reality, you know, if you're there.
Yeah, I think so. And I have to admit, when I mentioned before, when I came home while I was working hard on the book, it was a little unnerving, you know, to be there in real life instead of in my imagination.
Well, you're describing a certain period of time that no longer exists for a lot of that downtown area. I could think it'd be a little disconcerting to see people on the streets from 5 o'clock till 1 or 2 in the morning, and you're writing about how it's a wasteland, and there's people show up for 15 minutes as they're going to work and 15 minutes as they're leaving. I don't know. Maybe it was not, but it would seem to me that would be the case. It's like, wow, this has really changed.
Yeah, it makes me happy. I would love for people who do care about downtown Tulsa to read the book as kind of heralding, this increased interest in downtown, along with all of the restaurants and art spaces and bars and things. Yeah. It's obvious that I'm far from being the only person who cares about downtown Tulsa.
Well, I want to ask you one last question. You reviewed an awful lot of fiction over the last 5, 7, 8 years. Can you talk about the art of criticism as giving you insights into your own writing style? Has it helped? What does it afford you, having spent that much time sort of in the review business, in the criticism business?
It taught me that a book has to be really good.
Uh-huh.
Which is a scary thing to realize. It also taught me a lot about what kind of book I liked. I think a lot of people who are very interested in literature at college age are drawn to experiments, are drawn to, kind of monuments of innovation. And the first fiction that I published tended to be, for lack of a better word, experimental or metafictional. And I love those pieces very much, and I still write things a little bit like that. But reviewing so many books, I came to realize that I just kind of loved, to use your phrase, a coming-of-age novel. I loved a novel of memory, another phrase of yours. And so I think that accelerated my path to writing A Map of Tulsa. I'm not sure, had I not been reading and reviewing so many novels, 2 or 3 a week sometimes, would I have come so quickly to realize my own aesthetic. The phrase "my own aesthetic" is questionable, right?
One novel.
It's not like something inside of me that, right, was there to begin with. You have to rub up against things. And so, reviewing was a great way to rub up against a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, and in the case of this book, it is utterly of that tradition. This part one, part two, it's a wonderful story. It really is.
Thank you so much.
A Map of Tulsa, a novel. You can meet Benjamin Lytle tonight at a BookSmart Tulsa event. Ben, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Writer and novelist Benjamin Lytle speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. His new book is titled A Map of Tulsa. It's published by Penguin. You can meet him this evening at an event sponsored by BookSmart Tulsa and This Land Press this evening at 7 at Harweldon Mansion. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.